This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. This is the monthly show with Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician. How are you today, Dr. Rajini?
I'm fine, thank you, Xiao Ik.
And today we have a very interesting topic, and you actually suggested it to me, Dr. Rajini. And of course, we are also trying to align it with the Awareness Day for Down Syndrome, which was on the 21st of March, if I'm not mistaken. More generally, we're actually looking at how to raise children who give back to society. Now, our children today, I think, arguably live in a materially driven world. There are concerns by parents that, children are not perhaps as empathetic or compassionate towards others as we'd like them to be. So how do we raise them to and nurture the spirit of giving back to society, to maybe embrace volunteerism or charity? So we're going to find out more from Dr. Rajini, but also from our very special guest today, Sharifa Sarah, whose daughter Mariam paints, and the family uses her art to raise funds in order to save children's hearts. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that. But if you have anything you'd like to ask our guest today, or if you'd like to share your experiences of either teaching your kids about giving back to society, about doing charity, or perhaps you'd like to share how you were brought up with those values, do call us 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Sarah, how are you? This is your first time joining us on our show.
Yes, I'm good and very nervous for today, but enjoying this as we speak.
Well, I hope this question will put you at ease a little bit. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about Mariam.
Yes, thank you, Sherry. Mariam is 9 years old now. She's trisomy 21, or Down syndrome, as we normally identify the children. And she's a patient of Dr. Rajini's since she was a baby. Started off her intervention very early with the guidance of Dr. Rajini, of course. And it was our goal to make sure that we make her enjoy her therapy sessions, because we realized that in order to allow her to prosper and do well, she must be able to enjoy all her therapy sessions. So we explore a lot of things outside the conventional method of going to a hospital, thanks to Dr. Rajini's encouragement, of course. Ballet, for example. And then we started off with art. It started because she hated her occupational therapy sessions. She would cry every time because, as Dr. Rajini would share with everyone else, I'm sure, occupational therapy is very difficult for certain children, right? It takes a lot of sitting down, focus, and working on your fine motor skills. So we thought, hey, why not try art? Right? If you can hold a brush, even I struggle. I failed my art when I was in school. So we thought, okay, maybe this is something different for her. And we were shocked, to be honest, Shari, when her first painting that she did was actually, to me and to my husband, was very beautiful. And we often relate it to Van Gogh's sunflower painting.
Wow,
I'm very proud of it. It's not the same, but the concept is somewhat that. So it started off with that, and then we realized, I mean, people can paint, but she understands the color, she makes her own choices, she knows what she wants to draw, very opinionated. And that builds her confidence, right? And along the way, we wanted to find other ways to ensure that we can encourage her to pursue this therapy, firstly, and eventually be something that she can express herself and enjoyment along the way. So that's why we started off the Mariam Says the Heart initiative.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? How did it go from something that, you know, was supposed to just help Mariam in terms of therapy to something that helps other children? Can you tell us a bit more about this initiative?
Sure. I'm going to be honest here with our listeners. Initially, we ended up with 50 paintings that we didn't know what to do with, right?
Every parent's dilemma.
Yeah. And I see my parents and they're like, hey, this is a bit of an eyesore. We must do something about it, you know, because it's just too many. Just to lighten up the mood a little bit. But then we thought, what's important, right? We wanted Mariam to be acknowledged. I won't do this with my other children necessarily, but it matters for us when it comes to Mariam, right? To be acknowledged that her disability doesn't limit her, number one. And for her to see that we're not the only ones that would appreciate her paintings. So we started off with going out with our friends that we know who are art, who loves art, who appreciates art. I have no eye of, my husband and I would argue which one is nicer. So we're not art collectors. And they encouraged us to say, hey, this is actually very nice, you know, and you can actually make money out of it. But it sounded very, for us, you know, if Maria were to go out and say, hey, I want to sell my paintings, it doesn't sound so good either. We don't want her to see it's just about making money. So we thought we wanted her to also play a part in contributing to society. Why? Because we wanted to make her understand and other people around her to understand her disability or perceived disability. It's not going to be a deterrent for her to give back to society. So that's key. We wanted to, Dr. Jeannie would know this, all of us, our parents, always use the word do not limit me as a hashtag. So we wanted that to be the message. So we started off very small before we started Facebook, just via friends, WhatsApping everybody pictures of Mariam's 50 paintings. when we started off, we wanted her to give back to her school. It was Kiwanis Down Syndrome Center. So she collected quite a bit. But, you know, we also wanted to be fair to her. Charity is always about, being fair, right? So we agreed, my husband and I, she should keep some for herself. Mm-hmm. So we agreed on an amount. I don't know how that came about, but we thought it would be fair because we can manage her future and whatnot. So we thought, okay, 20% is a fair number that we retain. So Mariam at least can see that this is for her. Right, and 80% we give back to the society. That's how it started. We've done 4 art sales. So the second one, so happened, I'm taking a bit of time, just so excited about this. My husband's a pediatric cardiac surgeon in IGN, and often we see parents reaching out for funds, to collect money for operation and surgery. So we thought, hey, why not? We make it like, because she's your daughter, by the way, collect money, sell the art, and help the children in IGN to get surgery in IGN and those in need. And this would, of course, in our view, would appeal because, you see, charity also needs strategy. And because I work in strategy in my banking field, so it's just about connecting things together. And making Mariam feels that she's a part of her father's, what her father's doing, the good that her father's doing, right? Yes. So there is a story to it.
And she's not being forced to do this. Doing it because she sees the value of it.
Yeah. So you see, Mariam is naturally a person who likes to help out. If you meet her, you will see that she gets involved in every little thing. She's a little bit bossy like me in a sense. So she likes to be involved. So doing this makes her feel that she belongs with her father, right? She's contributing with her father. So often at work, my husband's work is very intensive. We rarely see him in the morning and at night. So we always make the children understand that he is giving his time for the society. Mm. So that would technically appeal to her in that sense. So we've raised three rounds of funds for the Mariam Saves the Heart initiative, targeting pediatric cardiac surgical patients in IJM. Mm. So that's how it started.
So yeah. She's literally saving children's hearts. Yeah. Now, Dr. Rajini, you know, how do children start to understand this concept of giving to others? Because I think inherently, from a young age, children can be quite self-absorbed, right?
Yeah, I think you're right there, Shari. And but children learn best from watching and imitating. So even if you start looking at a, let's start with an infant, say, for example, yeah. A child who may be scared of a particular toy because it jumps up or makes a loud noise will cry. If the mother then says, oh, it's only a toy, and you know, shows the child that it's not actually scary, that child then will reflect on, well, will actually start to mirror what the mother does. Yeah. So if you then are super anxious and says, oh, no, it's scary, and you put it away, each time that child sees that toy, that child's going to get scared because the mother shows that fear or that anxiety. And then as they get older, they start to make their own assumptions about things or based on what they've seen happening around them. So, for example, if they see their mom crying, because whenever I cry as a baby, my mommy picks me up and wipes my tears. If you look at a toddler who's 18 months old, they come and they wipe their mom's tears, you know, or they give mom a kiss on the cheek and maybe without the words, non-verbally stroke the face, etc. And as they get older, they build on this empathy. Of course, it's also not just the care, the mother, but other people around them and how other people treat them and react to them that sort of molds this development of empathy per se. So if you're talking about giving back to society, this is, of course, at a much higher level of empathy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Often if we sort of say to kids, you know, look at that poor man out there, he has no food. Why don't we go and offer him some food? The children then start to do that. Yeah, they may not understand the concept of homelessness, etc. But as they get older, they understand conventional social rules that everybody must have shelter over their head, etc. They start to learn to empathize at a higher level. So, you know, Sarah's just described how she and her husband have sort of worked with Mariam to sort of show her. And you know, if you've seen Mariam give her paintings away, you will see how excited she is and she wants to take a photo with you. And you can see the pride in her face and that she's proud of it. Maybe she might, and she relates to it as, this is my daddy's work, I'm helping my daddy. And because she previously used to go for checkups in IJN as well, she understands, you know, about being sick and maybe that level of empathy. You don't hear her probably verbalize it so much. But I think what's more important, and Sarah hasn't told you, is that she's got two older boys. And, you know, these are valuable lessons for not just Mariam, but the boys itself. So role models are very important for children when we talk about giving back to society.
We'll get a little bit more into that after the break. I'm speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, as well as Sherry Fasara, whose daughter Mariam has Down syndrome. But more importantly, what we're talking about is how Mariam has this initiative called Mariam Saves a Heart. She uses her painting her paintings to raise funds to help other children in need. And actually, what I want to find out when we come back is we may have some preconceived notions about how non-typically developing children perceive the needs of others, how they practice empathy or compassion, and that there's a misconception that non-typically developing children or children with special needs don't feel empathy. So I just want to find out whether that's true. If you have any questions or comments, do call us 0377332900, WhatsApp 0187898899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-ik. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, for Dr. Rajini's monthly show with us. And we also have joining us Sharifa Sarah, a mother whose daughter, Mariam, paints and uses the art. She sells the art to raise funds in order to help pediatric cardiac patients, children who need to undergo heart surgery, basically. And there's an initiative called Mariam Saves a Heart. There's a Facebook page and, all the information, and Mariam's paintings are there as well. But, before the break, we were talking about how children absorb what is in their environment, what they see and experience from their parents, from adults and other children around them, when it comes to responding to the needs of others. When somebody is upset, what do you do? What is your response? How do you behave? And this is something really that people around children should model, and that's how you teach children about this. Now, Sarah, I'd like to find out, there is a misconception or some sort of a preconceived notion that non-typically developing children don't understand the emotions of others. What are your thoughts on that?
I definitely would have to challenge that thought. But again, I'm very careful not to generalize, because I have been very lucky, right? And any parents with a Down syndrome child would tell you that, and I've been reminded when we first had Mariam, that Down syndrome children are the most loving children. And I think that makes it like an advantage for us in that sense. So I can't really comment about other disabilities or non-typical children for that matter. So I'm going to share with you from our perspective of Mariam, right? So how we started off is we made sure that Mariam is exposed to everything that we do, and we do not want to limit her from getting involved. And when you're helping out, like just like what Dr. Rajini mentioned before the break, right? You need to, they take cues from what you do as parents, right? When you get involved with taking care of your other children, for example, when they're unwell, or in my case, I stay with my parents, right? And they're very old. When I attend for example, my mom is a stroke survivor. So I make sure that Mariam is involved in everything that we do. So initially it starts to be like a habit. But eventually, right, I realized that because of her loving nature and how she cares for others very much, she is the one that goes to do the things on her own. And it started off with us getting her involved, knowing the fact that, we can't stop her, just because she's not well or she's a little bit behind on certain things. And every chance we get, as Dr. Rajini mentions, when we visit other children or we go to the hospital, we explain to her how lucky she is and how thankful we are of her health, and how we need to also care about others. That's number two. And I think the non-verbal cues is very important, right? Mariam doesn't express herself very well all the time, but she shows it with her actions, and this is where we encourage it, right? If she wants to express herself by doing things at home a little bit differently, just because she wants to make it look nice for her grandparents or for me, you just encourage that as you go, because you don't actually know for sure whether that's because she cares or, she just likes to do certain things. But And one thing that we practice with her is making her understand every time after she does something, why she's doing it and how wonderful of her to be doing it. But I thought I wanted to share this, right, Dr. Rajini and Shariq. We talk about parents a lot. And I think I want to share this. My husband and I, we were very careful from the beginning on the characters. You know, children relate to characters, right? The cartoons that they watch or the movies that they watch. We were very careful and we were very selective of what shows that Mariam watch, right? It's because I don't want her to be a princess. Just because, so that she is a princess in her own way. She likes to look beautiful. But we relate it to things like Doc McStuffins, because Doc McStuffins rescues her toys. So Mariam likes that, you know, helps her toys and other things. And good characters that she can emulate, that she can see, it's about helping others. So from beginning, that's what we did. And we were very lucky because she has she observes a lot. And that's one of the advantages. So actually, Shari, in summary, right, as parents, whether your child is typical or non-typical, you must be able to be attentive to see what is it that takes your kids and make them get excited or get or want to be involved. And in our case, I don't necessarily think it's because of her disability. It's just that we're very lucky. We focused on she's very loving, and we nurtured that, right? Yeah. So
and
that's how
it that as an opportunity. Yeah. Dr. Rajini, would you be able to shed light on some of the other special needs? And I think it's where autism perhaps tends to be labeled as such.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about empathy or giving back, you know, the action associated with, you can notice that something is wrong or unfair to someone else or that person's being hurt. So that's the first step. Then you've got to share those emotions. And what is actually judged as being empathetic is action that comes following that. Yeah. Your response to that person and your response to that situation. So, you know, Sarah just described how they were attentive to what Mariam was exposed to. But I think it's important to remember that Mariam, as a child, as children, any child with any disability or different needs, they have to be attentive to the what's going on socially around them. So that social attentiveness is important. The other thing is also about how you respond and how you interpret emotions. And so in children with autism, say, there's this myth that children with autism do not empathize. And that's not actually true. Yeah. If you look at children with autism, they recognize emotions, they feel emotions, but how they express those emotions are different. And we as society have developed these social norms on how you should respond to a situation. And then we define it as someone being empathetic or, you know, being socially aware. I just want to read this to you, Shauik. In reading about this, I remember this guy, Hari Srinivasan. He's a young adult on the spectrum. He is currently a university student in UC Berkeley. And he's what we describe as being minimally verbal. And he says, there are also many theories about autism, including the notion that autistics lack empathy. When you have sensory dysfunction, you are overly tuned to the environment, which includes all the emotions of the people you are interacting with, even the unspoken emotions on their part. The result can be an emotional roller coaster ride for me as I try to deal with all this bombard of information in addition to their words. Neurotypical people may assume that we autistics are incapable of thee, when in fact we just happen to express it differently. Reactions by way of our facial expressions and body language may not match what society is used to and expects.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for some, you know, expressing it verbally can be very difficult. And because of awareness of muscles in the body, so expressing it through their facial expression or even their movements can be difficult. Mm. So, you know, I think it's important to remember that and not jump to the conclusions.
All right. And, you know, it's not just what we as parents and family members or members of the community model positively, but I feel that there is a lot that we may not be aware of that could lead on to nurturing values of empathy or compassion. Just as an example, you know, I think, and this is largely coming from an Asian society, as parents, we focus a lot on how well our children are doing in school. And that is the focus of a lot of conversations at home. So, you know, what does this say? What kind of message does it send to kids, right? When parents are focusing on how did you do in school? You know, what did you learn? As opposed to maybe asking, you know, did you help out anyone in school today? I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, as Asian parents, we do. We focus a lot on their academics. And as Asian teachers, they do too, yeah. And this, of course, you know, what we mustn't forget is empathy develops across the years. So if you look at children and the development of empathy, it's not to say by the time they're five that's it. You know, it actually continues, and your understanding of social situations changes based on what you're exposed to. And, you know, I think this is where we need to relook at things. As a mother, I can tell you along the way, my children have been lucky to meet teachers who don't only reward academics, but they actually reward kindness. And I think this is where we need to, as a society, change and look at rewarding kindness as opposed to, you know, collecting brownie points to be the best. And to be the best doesn't, we need to nurture in our children that being the best doesn't mean you achieving that top mark or that top post or the best university in the world or, you know, things like that. It's beyond that. It's you as a person and your own social, emotional, spiritual development actually more important. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is where not just parents are important, but right from preschool teachers into the schooling age. And I guess this is where we probably need to look at education and change the way education curriculums are being presented in schools.
Sarah, I want to find out about your experience with your two other children. How do they view this idea of charity or of helping other people? You know, are they inspired by what Mariam does, for instance?
Yeah. So I'd like to say this, right? Firstly, my boys, they go to a Canadian system school, in Ontario school. And my husband and I have been consciously picking schools. This is like what Dr. Rajini said, right? It's about the teachers. It's about who they are mixed with and things like that. And one of the reasons, and I thought I wanted to emphasize this point, one of the things that we value about the Ontario system, and we've been very blessed to discover and afford it, to be fair, is because the emphasis is about character building. If you don't do certain community hours, you're not going to graduate, or you're not going to do well in school and graduate with honors. And I thought, you see, as much as we can inculcate the culture in our boys or the character in our boys, sometimes the kids tend to forget, right? And they need some reinforcement. And I thought this is good in that sense, right? And for my boys specifically, our motto is that we know that we can afford a lot of things. And it's very easy for them to forget that there are other people that struggles. And this is why it has always been a cautious effort on our side. And I think parents play a very big role on this. Number one, to make them realize that they are very privileged. And we wanted them to know that there are others that are equally, are not as equally privileged or are struggling. Mm. So for the boys from the very young age, they have always been exposed to volunteer work that we do. And my boys used to teach underprivileged children tuition for free. Mm. So those are things that unfortunately we had to force them at first, but it's it's a good thing because we wanted them to see how it feels right after, right? So with Mariam, for them is very simple. They relate to the work that their father does. We do discuss with them cautiously as well, expose to them the issues that are in the society. I think parents tend to shelter their children from the real world. And I don't necessarily think, of course, parenting styles different can be different for many people. But for us, we expose to them with current issues. We talk about politics at home. We talk about all this societal or economic matters so that they understand the role that we need to play when certain system fails. So we go back to tell them, look, this children died because he couldn't get, medical care, for example. So that creates some sort of responsibility on their side. Mm. So they get involved with what Mariam does. They get involved in wrapping the paintings, delivering the paintings, and they also get involved in, they go to the hospital with the father. So that's how we do it. That's, it's really, to me, if I may sum it up, it's about exposure. Mm-hmm. But if you can expose to them or afford an environment that can encourage them to get there, it's better.
All right. Yeah. We'll go for another quick break. And when we come back, I have my guests, Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Sharifa Sarah, mother of Mariam, who fundraises with her art. When we come back, I'd like to just tease out a little bit more from you, Dr. Rajini, about, you know, what else can we do to train, I suppose, quote unquote, children to practice charitable giving or volunteerism. So if you have any questions or any experiences you'd like to share, either as a parent or perhaps something that you were brought up yourself with, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. On Zoom with me are my guests, Dr. Rajini Saravanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Sharifa Sarah, who's been sharing about how her daughter, Mariam, has been fundraising by selling her paintings. This goes towards helping to fund surgeries for children who need heart surgeries. Before the break, Sarah was talking about how she and her family, how they work with their children to sort of get them used to the idea of what they can do to give back. And sometimes it takes a bit of forcing, perhaps. And sometimes it's also conditioning from the school in terms of the kinds of activities that are expected from children. What do you think, Dr. Rajini? What are some other ways that we can get children into the groove, so to speak, and to realize that, they perhaps, if they are privileged, how they can share it out with other people?
Yeah, I think, first of all, they need to see the distinction and they need to understand what is the value in that, I think, we talk about, we start talking about young children, and I know I always do this, but I think it's important to understand from a young child's perspective, yeah? So say, for example, they're playing together and they snatch a toy from their friend and the friend cries, that's an opportunity to step in and to say, I know you want a toy, but so does Max. How do you think he's feeling? Maybe we can take turns and, you work at it that way. As they get older, you may say, okay, you want that toy, but so does Max. How can we solve this? And you get them to problem solve. And then as they get into the school years, you hope through their experiences with being with other children that they learn that they have things that maybe other children don't. And this comes with just, you know, through their daily conversations and interactions. And this is where, as parents, we then need to connect those feelings and thoughts and the behaviors, for example. Yeah, like if I give you an example, we never allowed our kids to really watch a lot of TV, and so they miss it. And I remember when my daughter's friend came to the house one day, and I said, nobody's watching any videos, don't have the children channels, etc. And one of her friends said, to the effect of, why don't you have, you know, it almost felt as though she was concerned that, you know, maybe we were a little bit less privileged. Like, why don't we? It was more of concern rather than disdain. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And so I had to say, well, we made that choice. Yeah. And that's why we did it, because we can do other things to have fun. So similarly, if you see a homeless person on the street, yeah, we say to our kids, look at that homeless person. He has a home. You're so privileged. And, you know, if they've got a begging bowl there, what do we do sometimes? We put in the money, correct? So then what that child learns is, if someone else doesn't have money or they're underprivileged, I just give them money. But sometimes we want to take it that step mm-hmm. further. Yes, yeah, we provide them with money, but maybe we can provide them with food as well. Or maybe we can see whether or not, you know, as they get older, actually what they need is maybe a job or something else to help them earn for themselves. So it goes stepwise, and having these conversations and talking about behaviors of people and how people are different and why they may be different is very important. And then, of course, you know, there's that role modeling, you know, how else can you help? Yeah. You know, one of the things that we often see a lot of children do, so like Sarah says, a little bit of force is necessary. Children want to be acknowledged that they are doing something. So very often you see what happens. There's a lot of fundraising going on. Oh, I'll bake cookies, I'll sell cookies to buy people something or donate money, and they feel good about it. And we should acknowledge that is a worthy thing that you've just mm-hmm. done. But why don't we take it a step further? And this is where schools and families come into play. So we raised money for, say, Kachara Soup Kitchen. But why don't we go for one of their soup kitchen nights where they give out food for our children to learn that little bit more? Mm-hmm. So this is where we are talking about real life experiences. And one thing we know for sure with children who are differently abled, yeah, be it if they are on the autism spectrum or they have Down syndrome or some other intellectual difficulty, all children learn best when it's done in context, so in a social context. So it's very well and good that we teach the theory, but if we don't practice it, they don't get it, especially when they are growing up. Yeah. Mm. So I think, you know, contextual learning is a term used, especially in dealing with children with autism, but I think it applies to everybody, all children. Mm. Contextual learning, especially when it comes to social situations, things like empathy, etc., it has to be done in context, modeled by adults around them, and hopefully by society around them, yeah. You know, and it worries me sometimes when what we read in the newspapers or in social media, especially with our youth accessing a lot of social media. Now, if they don't have the right real life role models, yeah. And what they're accessing is only, things that they read about on social media or watch on YouTube, that worries me that they're not getting the right balance.
Mm. And just very quickly, Sarah, have there been instances where Mariam is, you know, through what she's doing with her art, where she's actually received negative feedback, criticisms, you know, or where she sees that her kindness towards others is not reciprocated. And how do you guide her through, you know, sort of like how she may be responding to that?
We've been very blessed in that sense that she has not experienced such thing as yet. In fact, I would like to turn that a little bit more. So the on the other side, right? So just what Dr. Rajin mentioned, we make Mariam go to send her paintings just because we wanted her to see how people appreciate her effort. And what it encourages her to do is actually she keeps on painting and she looks forward to going out to see others. And I think that's very important. In making sure that you acknowledge and you recognize every little effort. And some of these paintings, I can tell you, is not the best. but as long as people see and we too explain to her, right, it's not about how it looks. But it's she going to see someone to give that painting to that person. That matters. So it's, you need to really delve into that whole situation. Mm. Mariam is not yet at the age where she's very different from her peers. And we've been blessed in a sense, MCO kept all of us at home. But there were instances that she has faced negativities. And she secludes herself from participating with others. And we have been guilty, not really explaining to her. Rather, we make sure that we move her to a safer environment. Mm. I don't necessarily sheltering think it's a her. Good thing. Mm. And I think as she matures and we would need to explain to her that she needs to face these negativities. But we keep telling her that, look, you are not necessarily the same with your brothers, for example, mm-hmm. or your friends. But it's okay, because let's focus on your superpower of making people smile with her dimple, for example. So that's how we put it. At the moment, sheltering is always the way we go. But I discourage others to do that. We ourselves are learning in the process and finding the courage to face this with her. Mm-hmm. But we have yet to go through a bad experience ourselves, to be fair.
Yeah. All right. Is it ever too late to start children, you know, on these kinds of habits and practices of giving back, of volunteering, doing some charitable work, Dr. Rajini?
No, I think, you know, if you look at the theory, development of empathy, it's ongoing. Yes, of course, you know, when you start things early, for example, identifying feelings, things like sharing, turn-taking, it's always easier to work on it when they are younger.
Yeah.
Yeah? But when you talk about building on understanding of social conventions, say, for example, yeah, when we talk about moral behavior, yes, that's things that we can show children through cartoons, through
stories,
their own experiences, stories, etc. But when we talk about social conventions and social awareness, it's actually an ongoing process. Yeah. And actually, the research also shows that in people with disabilities, this is an ongoing process. Mm. Now, of course, the level at which children and adolescents learn things will be different depending, of course, on their social cognition, depending on their attentiveness, their ability to regulate themselves, etc. But always be mindful that just because a person doesn't show the expected actions, it doesn't mean that person is not ready to learn and move that step further.
All right.
So, you know, that constant exposure, that constant modeling and, you know, social learning is ongoing throughout adolescence. Mm,
in context, as you said, yeah. Showing, not just talking about it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mario, maybe just Sarah, we've been talking about Mariam so much. I wish she was on camera so that we could talk to her as well. Sarah, maybe just a final message, as well as, you know, how can we find out more about Mariam's initiative?
I'd like to give the courage to all parents to take time to discover your children on what makes them excited and what makes them happy. And that through that emotion, they will learn better. And try to channel that to something positive that they can give back, use the talent that they have to give back to the society. I think that's key. We will continue to do Mariam's art sale every quarter or any opportunity that we can. You can check out her Mariam Saves Her Heart page on Facebook and Instagram and help us help many to save many other children to get the right treatment from IGN.
All right.
So that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, as well as Sharifa Sarah. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.